Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for January 13th, 2015. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm talking with Eric Howra and Matthew Smith about an assay that can expand the identification of tumors that are likely to respond to therapies that inhibit EGFR signaling. Receptor tyrosine kinases are transmembrane receptors that bind to extracellular ligands such as growth factors and cytokines and transduce signaling intracellularly. EGFR is a receptor tyrosine kinase that's abnormally highly active in diverse types of cancer. This aberrant signaling can drive tumor cell proliferation, and drugs that target EGFR are used to treat some of these cancers. Aberrant EGFR signaling may result from mutations in the receptors themselves, and these mutations can be detected by genetic analysis of the tumor cells. However, there may be other causes for increased EGFR signaling in cancer cells, causes that can't be detected by sequencing the gene that encodes EGFR in these cells. My guests, Matt Smith and Eric Howra, have developed an assay that can detect increased EGFR signaling in cancer cells by measuring the interaction of EGFR with an adapter protein called GRAB2, which is required for EGFR signaling. Their assay detects aberrant EGFR signaling even in tumors with no activating mutations in EGFR. Their hope is that this assay could be used to improve identification and treatment of EGFR-driven cancers. Smith and Howra spoke to me from the H. Lee Moffitt Cancer Center and Research Institute in Tampa, Florida. Dr. Smith, Dr. Howra, welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Happy to be here.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Eric, increased EGFR signaling is associated with several types of cancers. How does aberrant EGFR signaling promote cancer cell growth?
Well, the main way that it does this is that it activates both pro-growth and pro-survival signals in cancer cells. Activation of the receptor leads to its increased kinase activity, and this facilitates the binding of a number of accessory proteins like GRAB2 that we talk about in our paper. And this now allows the receptor to engage downstream signals like the MAP kinase pathway or the PI3 kinase pathway, or even in some tumors, the STAT pathway. It's the engagement of these pathways that are known to drive the proliferation of cancer cells, maintain their survival, in some case drive new blood vessel formation or angiogenesis. So this is really the classic way that EGF receptor or other receptor tyrosine kinases are able to be promoting cancer cell growth and survival. And that's the reason why they're ideal targets in oncology.
Many tumors have mutations in EGFR that cause the receptor to be constitutively active. What else can cause aberrant EGFR signaling besides those sorts of mutations? Matt?
Aberrant or overly active EGFR signaling, it's really driven by two things: the levels of cell surface expression of the receptor and the amount of ligands in the extracellular space. So you can imagine a situation with highly abundant expression of EGFR on the cell surface will increase the chances that it interacts with ligand outside of the cell. And the expression of EGFR itself can be driven by a number of mechanisms, such as transcriptional upregulation, improper degradation, so it stays on the surface longer. And in terms of the amount of ligand, EGF can be produced by stromal cells and other cells outside of the tumor. And I think these days everybody's beginning to appreciate the complexity of the interaction with tumor cells and the stromal or non-tumor cells near there. So there's a variety of situations where both the tumor intrinsic levels of EGFR and tumor extrinsic factors, such as the amount of ligand, really contribute to the aberrant signaling. And that's kind of the beauty of our approach, is that we hopefully address both, regardless of the mechanism that causes the aberrant signaling.
There are several drugs that inhibit EGFR and that are used to treat EGFR-driven cancers. Gene sequencing can be used to identify those tumors that have activating mutations in EGFR and thus would be responsive to EGFR-targeting therapies. How do clinicians identify tumors that have aberrant EGFR signaling that's not due to mutations in EGFR? Eric?
Yeah, this has really been an unmet medical need for clinicians and oncologists. Classically, people have used immunohistochemistry to look at the total levels of EGFR protein or to be able to use FISH-based assays to look for gene amplification. These can be good in some cases in terms of identifying tumors that have more abundant gene levels or protein that, as Matt mentioned, is important in driving cancers, but it really lacks the information about full activation of the receptor. So things like the tumor stroma and ligands in the stroma can activate the receptor, and the way that we typically do this in the wet laboratory is to do Western blotting to look for phosphorylation of the receptor, but phosphorylation in patient-based materials is very tricky, and in some cases it's just not robust and not doable. So there are some other ways of looking at phosphorylation of the receptor using assays like reverse phase protein arrays that measure phosphorylation in small biopsies, but this requires fresh tumor material. One of the advantages of our approach is that we can use typical tumor specimens from pathology labs that are formalin fixed and paraffin embedded, and that we can actually look at the activation of the receptor through its engagement of these obligate adapters that are necessary for coupling to the downstream signaling.
Matt, what does your assay measure?
So for the studies described in the paper, what we've done is adapt a proximity ligation assay for use in formalin-fixed paraffin-embedded tissue. And as the name of the assay implies, we're measuring the proximity of EGFR with its major adapter, GRAB2. And we've done a kind of extensive series of validations where we can show that we're definitely not reading out just the levels of EGFR. And we can also show that this interaction is really abrogated by EGFR inhibitors. So by looking at how close EGFR is with its major signaling adapter, we feel like we can get kind of a novel way of looking at EGFR activity in actual clinical pathology samples, which is really kind of, as Eric mentioned, an unmet need in clinical oncology.
How well does your assay predict whether a tumor will be responsive to drugs that inhibit EGFR signaling?
So we think it has the potential to actually be quite good at predicting tumor response. There's probably always going to be samples that we can miss, but if your tumor is driven by EGFR and EGFR inhibitors are going to stop the growth of that tumor, it's probably absolutely required that you have active EGFR signaling, and that's really what we're measuring. And in the course of our work, we've been able to find non-EGFR mutant patients that have evidence of activated signaling. Conversely, we've also found evidence of EGFR mutant patients that don't have active signaling. And one of the things we also have thought about is, can you use these assays for looking at resistance-associated signaling? So if you had an assay for MET or FGFR that are known to bypass EGFR inhibitors, could you then identify the bypass signaling with this approach? So we've done a lot of work with EGFR, but we think the approach itself can be expanded.
How feasible is it to extend this assay into clinical practice?
I think it's very feasible, and this is definitely something that we're enthusiastic about. It's important to point out that the assay works in standard formalin-fixed paraffin-embedded material. So this is typical slides that one can obtain from any pathology lab. You can see protein complexes on a single-cell basis, so you don't need huge amounts of material to do this. We have some experience, but it's not in the paper, that you can use typical brown staining as opposed to fluorescent microscopy, which works well in pathology labs. So I think that this is clearly something that could be advanced. As Matt mentioned, we think that this has more potential just beyond the EGF receptor. So there's many other receptor tyrosine kinases that signal using adapter proteins, and we're already working on other assays that can reflect a activated receptor by viewing its protein complex in cells. And so this may give us new insights into ways to predict which patients are going to receive benefit from therapies. It may give us better ideas about which cocktails need to be given to particular patients. Maybe some patients are going to need two-drug therapy based on this. And also, as Matt alluded to, we still have problems in the clinical arena of drug resistance. And so we have some evidence, and we're working on being able to use these assays to understand that process of drug resistance so that when patients fail one kinase inhibitor, we can use our assays to detect the presence of, say, activated EGF receptor, which would then prompt clinicians to use an EGFR inhibitor as a way to thwart that resistance. So we think that this could be very applicable. It could be applicable beyond kinase signaling, and it can also be applicable beyond cancer. So the ability to now visualize protein complexes or molecular machines that drive disease could be a new way to annotate disease and improve the ability to give prognosis and predict which therapies are going to be most effective for patients.
Another step in advancing personalized medicine.
That's right. Yeah, and I think the one thing to just follow up on that is that tumors are complex. Tumors have tumor cells, but they also have stromal cells. Stromal cells can be cancer-associated fibroblasts, blood vessel cells, immune cells, and that it's increasingly appreciated the importance of those cells in communicating to cancer cells and vice versa. And that's a process that's not adequately addressed by a lot of genomic technology. So this type of proteomic technology could give complementary views into the complexity of cancer and hopefully, ultimately, how patients do with the disease.
Dr. Smith, Dr. Howra, thanks for speaking with me.
Yeah, we appreciate the opportunity to talk about our work. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
That was Eric Howra and Matthew Smith discussing a paper published in the January 13th issue of Science Signaling by Smith and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.